Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, November 25th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the weekend's box office numbers. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at SlashFilm.com. I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, you're in a slightly different setup today. So if your sound sounds different, your audio sounds different to listeners, that's why. But I think we should be good to go. So let's jump right into it. And why don't you run through the top 10 movies at the box office for me?
Will do. So this weekend was, as I've teased for a while, this was kind of the big weekend that the industry had kind of had circled on the calendar for quite some time, with Wicked and Gladiator 2 both hitting theaters. It is kind of a Barbenheimer level counter programming event where you had, you know, a big female front, you know, forward blockbuster based on some very popular IP against a more male focused epic of sorts. It lived up to expectations. So Wicked topped the charts domestically with $114 million debut. That was very much ahead of industry expectations, which had it kind of at the $100 million on the high end. So it did exceptionally well. It also did $50.1 million overseas for $164.1 million opening. That's just absolutely stellar. And we can talk a little bit more about this later, but, you know, like it or not, that's why they split this movie in two. At number two was Gladiator 2 with a $55.5 million domestic debut. The movie had already been opened overseas, so it is now already at $221 million worldwide. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Number three was Red One, last week's big movie, which, despite the competition, dropped 58.6% for $13.2 million. That is actually the best hold for a big streaming movie turned theatrical release, because usually these things fall off a cliff. So at number four, we had something called Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Spy, Assassin, which is the latest from Angel Studios. That did surprisingly well, $5.1 million on its opening weekend. Number five, we had Venom the Last Dance, taking in $4 million on its fifth weekend. Rather crucially, Venom the Last Dance now sits at $456 million worldwide, which kicked Beetlejuice out of the top 10 globally. And number six, we have the best Christmas pageant ever with $3.5 million in its third weekend. That one is becoming a quiet little hit for Lionsgate with $25.5 million domestically. Number seven, we have Heretic, the latest horror flick from A24 with another $2.2 million. Dropped 55%. What's interesting about that is that it lost pretty much half of its screens this weekend, yet it still only dropped 55%. So demand is still very much there for Heretic. That movie is at $31 million worldwide, I believe, and it is in the top 15 ever for A24. If it can get to $43 million worldwide, it will pass Past Lives to become one of A24's top 10 highest grossing movies ever. Number eight, The Wild Robot with $2 million in its ninth weekend. 140.7 domestic running total. Good for you, The Wild Robot. At number nine, we have Smile 2 with $1.1 million. That one lost 1,500 of its screens this weekend, so it had a 62% drop. Kind of on its last gasps there, but still plenty to justify Smile 3, should Paramount want that to happen. At number 10, we have Searchlight's A Real Pain with $1.1 million. That dropped 50% in its second weekend of wide-ish release, less than $1,000 per screen average. That one's kind of fighting for its life right now. So there's the top 10. How would you like to kick this off here, Ben?
Well, just talking about A Real Pain real quick, that movie came out or premiered at this year's Sundance. We talked about it on a podcast much earlier in the year. I have not been paying super close attention to the amount of money that movies have been making in like the 8, 9, and 10 slots. Does the fact that this is in the 10 slot with, like, what'd you say, $1.1 million, is that notable at all? Or does that seem sort of par for the course for what's been going on lately?
It's more or less par for the course. My rough barometer since the pandemic began, because in like 2021 and 2022, you were often seeing like the bottom three or four movies in the top 10 failing to clear a million. And that was really tough to see, because, you know, so even now when you're at, you know, the million-ish range for the bottom few in the top 10, you know, that's still not as good as it used to be. But so that's kind of my bar for success, right? If everything in the top 10 at least cleared a million, I think we're in sustainable shape. I guess is the way that I would put it. Again, that's sort of a rough rule that I have. I don't know that I could say that the industry would agree, or how you know, distributors and theater owners would look at it. But that's kind of, from where I sit, that's sort of my rough guide.
Gotcha. Okay, so we're going to talk a lot about Wicked and Gladiator 2. I guess before we get to that, though, the one other thing that kind of jumped out at me in that roundup that you just gave was Red One holding really well. And I wonder if we can just attribute that to the fact that it's a Christmas movie and, like, people are ready for that season to begin. I don't know if, like, anecdotally, like, a bunch of people in my neighborhood already have Christmas lights up and they've never done that before, or at least in the 4 years that I've been living here, like, they've never done it before Thanksgiving before. So it just kind of seems like that spirit is in the air and people are looking for either an excuse to celebrate Christmas early, or like getting that spirit of the season or whatever. And I wonder if that is sort of spilling over into box office interest, because, or is it just as simple as like the Rock star power is maybe stronger than, I don't know, Scarlett Johansson and Channing Tatum from Fly Me to the Moon earlier this year, for example, as another one of these sort of like streaming movies gone theatrical kind of thing.
You know, what's interesting about it is, like, I go through this all the time where, like, as I'm looking at these things, it's like, on the one hand, it is often so simple. And on the other hand, it is often so much more complicated. Like, it's weird how much nuance there is in it. But at the same time, these pillar things are like, is it a good movie? Is it that, you know, and it's like, and all these, so like, okay, critics might not think this is a good movie, but as we talked about last week, it's got like a 90% audience score. Like, general people love this movie. So, and now let's talk about what holding well means. Dropping almost 59% on a given weekend isn't great. For a streaming release, again, like Killers of the Flower Moon, I think dropped 72%, and that was the previous record holder in this weird category. So, like, these movies tend not to hold well. So I think it's partially like the Dwayne Johnson of it all, the Chris Evans of it all. Word of mouth is good. Christmas season, because you're also seeing that with the best Christmas pageant ever, right? Like, that movie dropped just like 33% this weekend. So, yeah, relatively. And that also shed 741 theaters. So, I mean, you know, the people are, yeah, it's that time of the year. It's in the same way that like a horror movie, if it comes out at the end of September, can hang in all the way through October, right? Because people are looking for horror movies to watch during Halloween. It's just good timing, and it's just that kind of movie. So I do think, yeah, like Red One, relatively speaking, what you said is exactly right. Like, it's yes to all of it. I think the thing is, this movie will probably be able to hang around until mid-December at least, and then, you know, obviously, like you said last week, like, Amazon's going to drop it on Prime Video, and it will have made a couple $100 million at the box office. You know, and I mean, I don't know. I'm mixed feelings about it, obviously, but, and I mean, this kind of thing's probably not going to keep happening. I think it was Variety published a piece earlier this week that this was kind of more of a relic of the streaming wars past, you know, like this, you know, because these things take years to actually come out. So this deal was made years ago, and you know, so it's unlikely that things like this will continue to happen. It's not going to be the future of movies, but, you know, as a relic of the streaming wars that once were, I mean, it's doing okay, sort of. You know, I don't know.
Okay. All right. That's as good as an answer as I could hope for in with something as nuanced as that. So,
yeah.
Okay. So I guess, how do you want to proceed here? Should we just talk about Wicked?
Yeah, I guess let's go top down here. Let's talk. Look, I have not seen Wicked yet. I must admit, even as a guy who doesn't like musicals, I love Cynthia Erivo so much. And I actually like John M. Chu a lot as a director. And I'm finding myself, like, almost wrapped up enough to, like, go see this damn thing. And, you know,
wow,
like,
that's shocking. I just assumed you were going to sit it out.
I said almost. I'm not saying for sure, because, like, I'm, you know, I'm going to see Gladiator 2 finally tomorrow. I was traveling this weekend, so I didn't get the chance. And, you know, maybe I'll watch it when it comes to, I guess it would be Peacock or VOD or whatever. Like, I'm curious. But let's talk about this. So a little bit more context here. This is now the biggest opening all time for a musical adaptation. And the previous record holder in that bizarre category was Into the Woods, which did $31 million. So it is not even sort of close. and is also one of the top 10 biggest opening weekends ever in the month of November, which beat Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire to sort of crack that. It's below Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1, which did $122 million, but it's kind of in that, you know, it got into that top category there. So it was huge. Now, we'll talk a little bit more about this in a minute, but what's interesting is that it was narrowly edged out overseas by Gladiator 2, which was in its sort of second weekend of major release overseas. So that sort of indicates where this might be going, right? Where, like, Wicked might play out a little bit more like Beetlejuice, where it's a little domestic loaded, or it's at least closer to a 50-50 split, whereas Gladiator 2 might have more of one of those, like, 70-30 splits, right? Where a lot of it comes from overseas. But ultimately, I mean, Wicked is off to a stellar start. The budget that I've seen thrown around is $150 million. Now, that's for part one of a part two, obviously. So I'm guessing it means they probably spent $300 million on the two movies. Now, that is a tremendous investment. And if this hadn't worked, part two would have been, you know, you'd kind of be like, you know, holding your breath a little bit. But what we're looking at is $164 million opening for a movie that has a 90% critical approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes and a 97% audience rating. I cannot remember the last time I saw one that high. And it also has an A cinema score. So every indicator is that this movie is just going to, even with Moana 2 coming out on Wednesday, you know, to get in on the Thanksgiving, like, Moana 2 is going to destroy. I don't think people are prepared for how big that movie's going to be. But it's also only going to eat this movie's lunch so much. Like, Wicked is going to hang in there. It might drop a lot next weekend because of Moana, but then it is going to hang in there up through the end of the year at least. This is going to lag out. I mean, I would say at least 500 million worldwide, but I don't even want to start predicting where this is going to go. I mean, it's essentially in the very, on the very low end, Universal looks incredibly smart for splitting this up, because word of mouth is going to be so strong on this one, and more people are going to catch up with it on home. And then the second one comes out exactly a year from now. So by the time people catch up VOD, Blu-ray, whatever, your audience for that sequel could potentially be even bigger. So you could have, like, a breakout sequel in the making. So, look, I know a lot of people that know the musical, know the Broadway show very well, are seemingly upset that this is split into two. I've seen some people sort of defend that decision. I can't speak on that from a qualified standpoint. What I am qualified to speak on is the business decision here. And the business decision here is one of the best I've seen in a while. Get mad at me if you want. Universal did the right thing here. You know, and look, I also think John M. Chu, for what it's worth, has seemed to stand by that decision. And it almost seems like it came from his camp, where he was like, look, I think that we need to, you know, not try to force this all into one thing. And, you know, whatever, like, I if people like it, who am I to, you know, it's the same reason I'm trying not to judge Red One. But, you know, this was very much what the industry needed. And it looks like we can finish 2024 strong, which, you know, you and I have had a bit of a journey on this podcast this year. And I think that I'm happy just that we're going to be able to end on a strong note. So that's kind of the my monologue about Wicked. If you have any more specific questions, I'm happy to.
Well, I was thinking about this in terms of, like, an example of maybe one of the better examples I can think of in recent memory of a studio spending money to make money in terms of the advertising campaign. Like, this, the marketing has just been, I mean, like, an onslaught seems like too weak a word to describe the level of product deals, brand management, like, all the stuff that they've done, and just the sheer sort of omnipresence of Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, and every single interview seems to be circulating widely, and it just seems like an all-out blitz of the highest order. And that stuff doesn't come cheap. And so you're talking about this movie being, you know, fairly expensive, and then, I mean, certainly not, like, whatever, the highest of the high-end Marvel stuff that we've seen or whatever, but, like, a pretty decent chunk of money for part one of a thing. And then when you factor in all the money that they've spent on the marketing campaign, it has to just be, like, astronomical. But I think for all the reasons that you just laid out, the fact that it worked seems to be, I mean, it's kind of a lucky break for them. You know, if the movie wasn't this good, I don't think this stuff would be happening. But I really, after seeing it last week, I think this is going to be one of those things that people, even in a busy holiday season at the movies, that gets some repeat business from people who really loved it, you know?
There's no question. And I think that, you know, what you're seeing now is, I think studios are trying to get smarter about the way they spend marketing money and trying to figure that out, because I think the old rule of thumb that if you have a $150 million movie, you have to spend $150 million to market it, I don't know that that's always true anymore. But I think that, you know, when you saw, like, with Barbie, which was a very expensive movie as well last year, but I think that once Warner Brothers realized what they had, they go, okay, we've already spent this money. Like, do we pot commit, and at what time do we just decide we believe in this because it is good? And then I think that that's what happened with Wicked, and that's also partially why they split it in two, right? They believed what they had. They believed in the strength of those two lead performances, and they believed in the material. So they said, okay, we were not initially committed to $100 and $150 million marketing spend, but look at what we've got. Let's do this. And it's clearly paying off. Like, you know, so I mean, it's you know, and I think the only other thing that I would point out is that, like, sort of like It Ends With Us earlier this year, you know, there was such a gold rush for all these years for comic books and, you know, nerd stuff specifically, but there is something to be said about, why don't we just adapt a popular thing and do it well? Because there's an audience there, you know, this was a very successful Broadway show. It's tied to The Wizard of Oz. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's easier said than done. Don't get me wrong. But, like, so is making a good comic book movie. And, like, you know, but they figured that out. So, like, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's a way to make more Broadway shows. Maybe there's a way to do more just straight up novels that were successful. Like, if IP of some kind is still important, and clearly it is, maybe it doesn't have to be comic books. You know, like, maybe it can be other things. And I think that, you know, if you can parlay $150 million musical into, you know, a $500 million global success, at least with a bunch of product tie-ins with a sequel on the way, you know, that's money in the bank all day, and it's good business. And whether or not it's for me, who cares? It's for a lot of people, and I'm happy to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, real quick, speaking to the splitting it in half conversation, BJ and I spoke about this a little bit on Friday's episode of the show, but I have since listened to an interview. I forget where it was now. I've listened to, like, so many podcast interviews and stuff, but Stephen Schwartz, who was one of the creative minds behind the original Broadway musical, and then also he worked on this movie adaptation, specifically said something that I think BJ said on Friday's episode, which was, like, it's tough to continue the story after the climactic defying gravity ending of Act One and what ended up being the ending of this movie, because the heights that that song hits are just so high emotionally and story-wise and everything, that to then continue a movie after that, there's kind of the emotional component of the movie would just, like, fall, like, the tone of the movie and everything would just kind of, like, fall off a cliff, because there's just not much you can do there. So it was almost like they needed that break. So that was, from my understanding, very much, like, factored into this decision pretty early on in adapting this project. So I think it ended up being a smart choice. I typically look at this stuff really askance and always have my eyes narrowed at that as just, like, a crass business decision to milk as much money out of people as possible. But I
and
think
that does happen. That does happen. Oh, yeah. And because, like, you know, we've seen that for sure. But, like, you know, but I think that, like, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but, you know, I agree with you. Like, that's why I understand why eyes narrow at that, because, like, sometimes it, like, Hunger Games is a perfect example of that. That's just bilking people. You know, that's mm-hmm. a different situation, but.
Yeah,
you know,
and the Hobbit trilogy. I mean, there've been a ton of examples, but yeah, I just think a case could be made creatively, not just on a business angle, for why this had to be made. So, just wanted to defend this movie on those grounds. So, let's take a break, actually, and then we'll come back and talk about Gladiator 2, which we haven't really gotten into much yet.
Cool.
At at Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, Ryan, tell me about Gladiator 2. What do you think? I mean, how would you just judge this movie's performance looking back? I know that Wicked kind of overtook it at the domestic box office, but like you mentioned, it opened a week earlier overseas. It's got a pretty strong overseas interest at this point. So would you say that Gladiator 2 like did well, or was it a little disappointing, or how would you categorize that?
Well, look, it's all. I would say that by no means is a $55.5 million opening for a non-comic book R-rated adult-focused movie. Absolutely not. This is excellent for a historical epic. I think it's the second biggest opening of Ridley Scott's career, you know, behind, I think, only Hannibal. You know, so, in no way can you categorize this as... Now, the elephant in the room for this entire thing is going to be the budget. Now, it is thankfully not $300 million, as previously reported, but it is in the $250 million range. And that came directly from the head of Paramount, I believe. So, you know, that's tremendously expensive. So, is it likely to purely profit in theaters alone? I would say not. Can it, if it can somehow get some award season love, hang in there through the rest of the year, do well on VOD, can it do well through the life of the movie? I believe so. So, like I said, internationally, it's done very well. It's done $165.5 million so far. And just for some context, it did, like, I think $87 million last weekend internationally, which was great. Internationally, this weekend, Wicked did 50.1, whereas Gladiator 2, in its second big weekend of rollout overseas, did 50.5. So it edged out Wicked, like I said. So that is a great indicator. And again, like we cannot... If you take the budget out of it, $55.5 million, almost doubling, I think, what the original Gladiator did on its opening weekend. Like, if you account for inflation, the audience is still there. You know, so that's great. Is it too expensive? Yeah. But I think that it's still going to probably be okay, more or less. Like, because at this point, you know, again, you're probably also looking at close to a $500 million worldwide take, I would think. Unless it really legs out and the beginning of next year is slow and it can kind of really just kind of do a Wonka crawl and sort of, you know, get closer to $600 million. And I think that's probably closer to a break-even point for Paramount. So, you know, I think it'll be totally fine. And I think that, you know, if you know, the fact that what it says to the industry at large is, okay, if you had made this movie for closer to $200 million, you know, that would be nice. But ultimately, it's another example of, you know, stellar counter programming. Like, it doesn't have to just be one thing. Both of these movies, it performed at the high end of expectations, well, opening against each other. Like, do I think Gladiator 2 would have made $75 million if Wicked hadn't opened the same weekend? Absolutely not. You know, and similarly, do I think Wicked would have made $150 million if Gladiator 2 had opened a different weekend? Absolutely not. I think that they both sort of, you know, So I think that, look, the Gladiator 2 needs legs is the thing. It can't drop 70% next weekend, but I don't think it will. It has a B cinema score, which works against it a little bit. But, you know, so word of mouth is not as strong as it is for something like Wicked. But so I think it runs the risk of petering out a little quicker domestically. But at the same rate, there is less R-rated adult focused competition coming down the pipeline. Like, Moana 2 is absolutely going to cut into Wicked's, you know, take a little bit next weekend. it's not at all going to cut into Gladiator 2's take in that sense that the audience is different. So there's a lot of moving pieces here, but I would say that this broader experiment of these two movies at the same time was a success. And I think Gladiator 2, for all of my concerns, you know, at least at the beginning, it's hard to point at it and say it's failing.
Yeah. I would say on a gut level, I just feel like that first movie was so big, such a big cultural moment at the time that and so many people saw that movie on DVD over the years or whatever. So like the awareness of the film, I feel like is through the roof. And if people are even remotely willing to turn that awareness into action, I think there's a strong chance that this could have a pretty long tail. So we'll see how that goes. But I was curious about the Barbenheimer comparison. I mean, people have been talking about that for months leading up to this. And obviously it's not, I don't think you're ever going to be able to really recreate the circumstances that went into that and turn that into a kind of like a, certainly a once in a generation, if not a once in a lifetime movie going event. But this is like kind of close just in terms of some superficial comparisons. But I don't know, what would you say in terms of whether or not this was effectively this year's version of Barbenheimer?
I would say effectively it was. I think that there are some key differences. So is it Barbenheimer Part 2? Not exactly, but let's look at what Barbenheimer did last year. So Barbie opened to $162 million. Oppenheimer opened to $82 million. What do we got? A movie roughly an adult focused R-rated movie opening to about half of what the female focused more broader audience friendly PG-13 movie did. Does that sound familiar? so I think like in that way, and you know, Ridley Scott is a director with a lot of cachet. Is he quite Christopher Nolan? I don't think so, as far as like the movie star level of director. But I think like, so that would account for, you know, maybe the 55 to 80 million, you know what I mean? That little bit of a difference there. And then as far as Barbie is a bigger brand. And I think Margot Robbie is a slightly bigger star. So, all due respect to Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, right? Like, but, so I think that would probably account for the difference there. So I think that like taking the pieces that were on the table, the IP that was on the table against the IP that was on the table last year, it is not exactly apples to apples, but it's close. Again, I think that goes to the counter programming lesson more than it does anything else. I think the biggest difference here, and something I'll talk about for us in writing a little later, is that the internet really took the ball and ran with this Barbenheimer thing, you know, because it was such a like, can these two movies open together? But you have, you know, the Christopher Nolan people and the people loving this like IMAX experience for this non-superhero movie tentpole, and you know, people, you know, Barbie launching maybe one of the best marketing campaigns I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. You know, and sort of people around, and then people sort of going, no, you don't have to be one, you know, and the internet sort of embracing, you can do both. You know, and sort of like that. So the internet took that and ran with it. The internet did not take and run with Glicked in the same way that it did with Barbenheimer. And I think that's really the only difference, is that it from an industry standpoint, for anything that matters, it proved the same counter programming points. It both movies performed roughly equivalently. It's just that the internet didn't, you know, this the internet miracle of free marketing couldn't have happened again. Also kind of funny to point out, though, that during Barbenheimer's weekend last year, another Angel Studios movie called Sound of Freedom was also doing surprisingly well at just below Barbie and Oppenheimer, which is like super weird. But like, but yeah, that, you know, but anyway, so that aside, I think that the comparisons were more or less warranted. You know, again, you can't predict what the internet's going to do. You can't. It goes back to the whole miracle, like you said, that once in a generation Barbenheimer thing of, when people get behind something, when the internet makes something viral, when that translates to real world action, that cannot be manufactured, period, end of discussion. And so, you know, without that internet groundswell, I think, yeah, the comparisons are warranted. So, you know, overall, it was a very good weekend. And I think that both movies are set to leg out. And then I think, you know, Moana 2 is going to just level expectations, so we are really in for like a serious boost here as we head to the, you know, end of the year. I'm feeling very optimistic about it all.
Awesome. I'm really curious what next year looks like, because next year around this same weekend, we'll have Wicked Part 2 and the version of Glicket or whatever you want to call it, or 2025's Barbenheimer could very well be Wicked Part 2, which is going up as of right now. It's going up against Edgar Wright's remake of The Running Man. So could be a kind of similar scenario, assuming both of those movies keep their date and stuff like that. So
I think that's still good counter programming, but I think based on some of the things I talked about, Wicked Part 2, assuming they can parlay this film's success into a very, like, I don't know how good Part 2 is. I don't know if the footage is as good. I don't know if they have a lot of great trailer moments. Let's assume they do. Let's assume Universal has a kick-ass trailer for Wicked Part 2. There is no chance Running Man is going to make a fraction of what that, I mean, a fraction.
Glenn Powell's an absolute movie star, but
I mean, it's not even going to be close. I could see Wicked Part 2 doing like 150 million opening weekend, whereas something like Running Man, I mean, 30 million would be incredible, you know. So I think that I could be wrong about that, but like based on the information, so I mean, I think it would be another good example of counter programming, but it wouldn't quite be the two blockbuster movies going head to head. Would, you know, that's sort of my take on it. But like you said, a lot can change between now and then. So whether or not both those movies hold their dates, who knows? But we'll see.
Yeah. All right. So what else from this top 10 do you think we should touch on before we wrap it up today?
Not a ton, but I will say, sort of looking outside the top 10, just because, you know, we won't talk about it a lot more, Terrifier 3 sort of firmly made its way into the top 50 worldwide this year, even if you account for international releases.
Wow.
Which is just so weird. It's still just like, but also pretty cool. So I think we'll probably get some sort of re-release, maybe a little closer to Christmas, and maybe that pushes it to closer to 100 million. Another thing that was sort of worth looking at is that Conclave fell out of the top 10, but it still made just north of $1 million, despite losing well over half of its screens. So, you know, that movie's still hanging in there and coming up on $30 million domestically. That is maybe one of my biggest surprises of the year. Up there, that is certainly, you know, truly, truly worth looking at when this is all said and done. But you know, probably worth looking at real quick here, just because we're coming up on the end of the year. As we talked earlier this year, at one point I think the domestic box office was down something like 23% or something. It was really atrociously bad. You know, compared to, so last year the domestic box office finished with $8.9 billion. That was Box Office Mojo's total. Comscore had it at about $9 billion. But right now the total domestic box office, according to Box Office Mojo, is close to $7.2 billion. So by the end of the year, I think we could close that gap maybe closer to the $8 billion mark. So, you know, we'll finish maybe somewhere between 10 and 11% down from last year, but given where as bad as things were at one point, I'll take it. you know, that's kind of where I,
and
that's kind of
the fact that this was like the post strikes year, and that so much has been moved, and 2025 just looks like a kind of a murderer's row of big movies coming out. Like there's definitely, it seems like there's potential for next year to be a really big year at the overall box office. So we'll see how that goes. But I think you and I are planning to do like a sort of a look ahead, a 2025 box office preview sometime in the next few weeks. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, I'm looking forward to really digging in and like looking at the calendar and seeing what's there and being, I'm looking forward to being reminded like, oh yeah, that movie exists and it's coming out, you know, that kind of stuff. I always,
yeah, there's more than a few of those next year for sure. Like there's definitely a few of those like, oh yeah. But yeah, that's about all I got. Cool weekend, big weekend. Congrats to Universal Pictures and Paramount for putting that together.
Excellent. Okay. So I think the plan right now anyway, is to have an episode tomorrow. We may have an episode Wednesday. I think it's going to be a Moana 2 episode Wednesday. We're going to take Thursday off for Thanksgiving. And then I believe Brad and I banked an episode for Friday. So we really shouldn't miss too much this week. So stick with us, and thanks everybody for listening. So that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about these stories that we mentioned at slashfilm.com. I will link to a few things in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. We'd really appreciate that. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.